Welcome back to the Monsters and Mixers podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Amy.
And I'm Emma.
And sorry for the unexpected two-week hiatus. We have been super-duper busy getting ready to sell the house and make our big move.
And we were out of town for a long weekend in Louisville a couple weeks ago, so it's just been a lot.
There has been a lot. But we're back, so hopefully you are enjoying listening to some of the older episodes if you hadn't listened to them while we weren't putting out new content.
Yeah.
There's lots of good stuff there. And we're almost into spooky season.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, we need to do something special for that, probably. Figure out something cool to do.
Yeah.
It's different than what we normally do.
Yep.
We've already been full into spooky season. I had a Scream marathon the other day, and we're watching... Went to the movies to see a scary movie. We're watching a lot of Travel Channel Ghost Adventures. I am ready.
And we saw Barbarian, which I highly recommend. It was freaking awesome.
Mm-hmm. You know a horror movie is going to be bomb when Justin Long's in it.
Yeah.
Some of my favorite, like, shitty scary movies are Justin Long movies.
I feel like they're campy, not necessarily ever shitty.
Well,
Jeepers Creepers is not
Jeepers shitty. Creepers would not be on the list of what I'm talking about. But Tusk and Drag Me to Hell are definitely on that list.
Again, campy, not necessarily shitty.
I mean, Tusk is literally about a man who's cursed and, like, turned into a walrus. It's not, like, the smartest concept ever, so.
Yeah, I haven't seen Tusk.
You would hate it. It's gross.
Put that on my
list. It's
kind
of like body horror, which is not your favorite.
No, it's not. All right, well, we decided since it seems like you guys really liked our last Let's Not Meet episode, we are going to do another one today.
Yeah, and we're doing it a little different this time. I picked out a few stories, and then you picked out a few stories, and we haven't read each other's stories, so it's kind of like surprise.
We shared the titles, so we didn't read the same ones twice, but other than that, we're going in blind, and Emma's going to start.
Yeah, so we'll just get right into it. The first one that I chose is actually a recent one. It was posted 8 days ago, so way more recent than most. And it's verified, so the story has been verified as real. And the title is, I Live Below a Cult Leader and I Fear I've Angered Her. So it says, I, female 28, have lived in the same apartment for 4 years. My neighbors in the unit above me are a couple in their 30s who have lived there for about 3 years with no issues between us. During the past 6 months, I've noticed some changes in their behavior. At first, it was just a few days per week. I'd hear music with heavy bass accompanied by rhythmic jumping. I assume they bought an exercise bike or something, but sometimes the jumping gets so intense that it shakes my overhead light fixtures. The jumping routine has been escalating to the point that it takes place every day, normally between 8 a.m. and 10 a.m. I also noticed that they called 1-800-JUNK and got rid of a lot of nice possessions. However, I figured none of this was my business, so I kept my observations to myself. About 3 weeks ago, everything escalated. Multiple times per week, on weekdays and during working hours, it sounds like they're hosting a mini Burning Man event in their apartment. The music is so loud and clear that it sounds as if I'm at a concert while sitting in my living room. There's clearly a lot of people involved because the jumping and stomping shakes multiple light fixtures and my cabinets. Which is just even... That's so rude.
Yeah.
That is definitely upstairs neighbor behavior. It's so strange.
Privileged upstairs. Yeah,
no kidding. The music is a mix of new age and spiritual vibes, dance beats, and a male voiceover giving weird instructions like, rebrand yourself, surrender yourself, stomp, stomp, in response. I've taken audio recordings on my phone and one video from the hallway during these events. I still didn't complain to the building, but I wanted evidence in case it became a regular thing. This week, I've encountered a big problem. The couple above me has a private patio, which is directly above my bedroom. I came home from a 3-day trip out of town yesterday, and my ceiling is legitimately collapsing in one corner. Big chunks of plaster had fallen to the ground, and I saw a little water. I immediately called my superintendent since I don't want to be buried alive by ceiling rubble if it gives out, and when he came to check it out, he was shocked and pissed. He said that the woman and the couple appears to be working with some people, quote, working with some people, doing workshops or something. He can see their patio from his apartment window and has watched the group do these dancing, jumping, quote, dirt rituals out there on a weekly basis.
What the hell's a dirt ritual?
I don't know. I guess we're going to find out.
Okay.
He said they all dance and jump to the music and then spread dirt along with something else that he doesn't know what it is across the patio on a weekly basis. He believes that the dirt and unknown substance combo is getting through the wooden cracks, absorbing water, and weighing down my ceiling, which you probably. In order to fix the problem, my super said he had to go talk to the woman, check out their patio, and ultimately hire a contractor to pull up the wood to scrape out whatever the hell was causing my ceiling to fall. I could hear them talking from my room, and the woman sounded distraught and defensive. When my super left, he called me and warned me that she might try to come down to my apartment and demand to see the damage, but don't let her in. This was a little concerning to me. Is she a threat? The damage is real. I wouldn't mind showing her. She started playing her music again relatively loud, kind of like a warning shot. I mentioned the music and jumping to the super and said I had audio recordings. He started begging me to send the evidence to the front office. It sounds like he wants them evicted. I said, okay, sure. I hate to be a rat, but if I have to choose sides, I'll side with the building that dictates my annual rent price. He called me twice more that afternoon to confirm that I shared my evidence, and I said yes. Shortly after everything went down, I left my apartment to run an errand. The woman was outside, just standing on the sidewalk, and stared at me the whole time as I walked by. I ignored her. This isn't my fault. Now, today, I went to run another quick errand in the neighborhood, and when I returned, the couple was again standing on the sidewalk, both of them this time, followed me into the building, and then waited until I was opening my apartment door to confront me. They were both wearing creepy fake smiles. The woman has horse girl hair down to her waist, which is long, thick hair, I'm assuming. And started interrogating me. They asked, is your ceiling really collapsing? When did it start? Do you think it was related to the recent rainfall? Because our patio is just fine. I was a little uncomfortable. Were they waiting for me outside? How did they know I even left the building? Why were they both standing there? I've literally never seen them enter together in their 3 years of living here. But I have nothing to hide, so I confirm the damage is pretty bad. I just don't want it to fall during the winter. I'm sorry for the inconvenience, but hopefully the work will be done quickly for everyone's sake. They seemed satisfied enough, so I said have a good day and shut my door. I'm getting the sense that they're nervous about what the contractors will find when they tear open their patio. What the fuck is up with dirt rituals? Who are these people she's, quote, working with? I don't know what they look like or why they're available to stomp around on weekdays. The repair work has started on both sides, but the contractors will come on Wednesday for the grand reveal of what's under the patio that's making my ceiling collapse. In the meantime, I feel like I need to be alert and keep my eyes out for these people, as well as the couple. It's unusual for me to see them in general, especially twice in 2 days. They seem scared and in denial of the problem. They also literally ambush me. Hopefully it's over soon. We do have an update.
Okay, good, because I need more information.
And we do have the audio recordings if anyone wants to go to this post and hear the dancing and singing and stomping.
Like a river dance.
Yeah, that'd be... Even if they're not doing something, like, strange, that's so fucking rude.
It is incredibly rude.
Like, I had... The last place I lived, my first place by myself, essentially, the people upstairs, because we were in a split level, the people upstairs, one of them was, like, a DJ. And she would do her DJ shit at, like, 8 in the morning. And I'm like, this is... You're living above 3, like, college students.
Yeah.
This is not the time to be doing this during the week.
Not the time to do it, even if it was just other, adults living there, like, with a job.
Right.
You don't do that.
No. So, her update says, the contractors came today and reported that there was, in fact, dirt and sludge visible below the neighbor's patio. However, thanks to the help of my internet sleuthing friend, I've gained a lot more insight into the realm that dwells above me. As one Redditor suggested, my neighbor is affiliated with multiple ecstatic dance communities, both international and local. The international group has planned events during which all cells of the organization host dance sessions simultaneously. It also has a YouTube channel that streams psytrance music 24/7. I listened to a portion of it and a female voiceover declared, "You are becoming the game master."
What?
Meanwhile, the local groups seem to be more exclusive and more radical in their mindset. One of the local groups, hosted by my neighbor's good friend, conducts 3-day events that cost upwards of $400 for admission. Participation in all 3 days is mandatory. I get the impression they all sleep in the studio space, and the event description mentions that it begins with a ritual. The last and darkest affiliation that I've confirmed via social media footprints is that my neighbor and a few members of the local communities are also involved with some compassionate death groups. There's no way for me to verify at this time if these affiliations overlap in a meaningful way, so I'll simply state the facts that I have evidence to prove. My super asked me about the jumping again when I saw him today. He remains eager to act. He agreed with my new game plan to wait for another event to happen and then call him to, quote, check on my dishwasher so he can intervene. So for now, the ways in which the puzzle pieces of ecstatic dance, compassionate death, patio dirt rituals, and ceiling collapse connect will remain a mystery.
I cannot figure out what the dirt has to do with anything.
What is compassionate death?
That's like Dr. Kevorkian.
No.
Yes. Compassionate death is when people agree that it's okay for terminally ill people to...
Like euthanasia?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so I don't have a problem with that.
So like death with dignity?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. But I still don't understand why they have to clog on dirt.
Yeah, someone in the comments said that this sounds like real life Archive 81.
Yeah.
Like literally, like she's living in Archive 81.
Oh, the chanting and all mm-hmm. the weirdness. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I thought that one was scary. Even if it's like not nefarious, that has to be so annoying to live with that. And also she's probably scared because she has, these people live, know where she lives, knows that she's the one like narking on them.
Well, yeah.
Even though she's not really narking on them, she's like, I have these issues.
My ceiling's going my to fall. My ceiling's going to fall. I'm sleeping.
And then she's not going to have a place to live.
Yeah. Sorry for the tissues rumbling. Okay, so I have one. It is from 8 years ago from U Libby's Lane. And it's titled Hell's Waiting Room. It's kind of long, so buckle up. All right. During my early 20s, I worked as a meter reader in Iowa City, Iowa. A meter reader is the person who records how much electricity, gas, or water you've used each month. If your meters are on the inside and you want an accurate bill, a meter reader must enter your home whether you're there or not to let them in. And then there's an edit.
How do they get in?
Hold on. Edit, just to clarify, we only entered homes if consent was given when the customer first signed up for service, and they also provided us with keys if necessary. So probably some little hidden rock thing. Mm-hmm. Entering a home when the owner isn't present is something that I never got used to. No matter how loudly I knocked, I never shook the uneasy feeling that I wasn't welcome. The inside of a home is the ultimate private space. A home's exterior is just the image of ourselves that we project to the rest of the world. But the further you venture inside, the closer you come to truly seeing what kind of person lives there. And if you want the raw, unfiltered truth, head for the basement.
Our basement's pretty boring.
You know, well, it's a finished basement that we use a lot. So it's not like a basement, which I despise. Terrifying. I hate basements. I've seen walls that look like giant static-filled TV screens until I realized it was roaches scurrying across a white background. Cobwebs so thick and dusty that it looked like a cotton candy machine exploded at the Spider County Fair. I've seen rats, snakes, feces, weapons, neglected children, abused pets, homeless squatters, massive hordes, bizarre sexual items, a makeshift meth lab, and a coffin. There are rational explanations for all of these, except for maybe the coffin. But there was one basement where what I found was beyond the grasp of logic, and that's what made it so terrifying. Sorry, I'm having to clear my throat a little bit. It was an old apartment house. From the outside, it looked like every other house on the block. I entered the back door and found myself at the top of a staircase. I ran my hand along the wall until it grazed a light switch. I flipped the switch, but no lights turned on. I wasn't carrying a flashlight. A typical route involved 5 or 6 hours of walking, so I carried as little as possible. Oftentimes, I used the light from my handheld screen, but it only illuminated whatever was about a foot in front of it. So, armed with the world's worst lantern, I made my way down into the darkness. Once at the bottom, I blindly shuffled across the room, one baby step at a time. With arms outstretched and head down, I eventually reached the far side of the basement. I shined the dim light from my handheld along the wall and discovered two doors. Each door led into its own small room. I chose the door on the right and found the meters in the far corner. As I entered the reeds, I began hearing noises coming from the other room. Something was moving, and there was whimpering that grew louder the longer I listened. I eventually realized it was a dog. It sounded weak and distressed. I tried to open the door, but it was locked. At this point, the dog was scratching the other side of the door. I felt helpless. I reported it when I got back to the office, but I couldn't shake the thought of that dog. It stuck with me over the next month until it was time to return. So there I was, 1 month later, back within the basement. At least this time I knew where the meters were located. I shuffled back to the little room on the right while keeping my ears open for any sounds coming from the other room. This time, I heard nothing. I read the meters and started making my way back, but I couldn't shake the memory of that dog. Was it still trapped inside that room? My curiosity got the best of me. I stood outside the door for a few moments, listening. Still nothing. That's when I made a huge mistake. I tried to open the door, and I had no more than jiggled the doorknob when I first heard it. Screams. Blood-curdling screams, unlike anything I've ever heard. Sounds that I didn't think a human was capable of producing. Short, piercing, high-pitched shrieks followed abruptly by a low, drawn-out, guttural moan that ultimately morphed into something that I can only describe as crying, but much louder. It was all over the place, like some sort of psychotic freeform jazz. I stumbled backwards, nearly losing my balance. I shouted something like, "Hello? Who's in there?" There was no response, just screams. "Are you okay? Do you need help?" Still no response, just screams. There was no doubt that I yelled loud enough for him to hear me. He didn't want my help. He wanted me gone. I fumbled my way through the darkened room toward the exit. When I reached the top of the stairs, I just stood there, listening. I was trying to wrap my mind around what I was hearing. I waited for the screaming to stop, but it never did. When I finally left, it was still as loud and demented as it was when it began. I felt relieved, but that quickly vanished when I realized I had to do it all over again next month. I reported what I'd heard, but nothing came of it.
Call the police.
I think that's what she's saying, like she's reporting it to her boss. I don't know. As my return drew nearer, a sense of dread grew inside of me. What kind of lunatic sits alone in total darkness and silence? My mind created endless explanations for what kind of hell lay beyond that door. By the time I returned, I'd built him up in my mind so much that anyone other than the devil himself would have been a letdown. But there was no sign of him the next month, or even the next several months. I'd nearly given up on solving the mystery when a stroke of luck pulled me back in. One night, I went to a concert with my friend Laura. After the show, I gave her a ride home. She'd moved somewhat recently, so she had to give me directions. I didn't pay much attention to where she was leading me until she pointed to a house a ways up the street. I couldn't believe it. She had moved into the house with the mysterious room in the basement. I said, "This sounds weird, but have you noticed anything odd about the basement at this?" I began to ask, but before I could finish my sentence, she blurted out, "A crazy guy lives down there." Finally, I had confirmation. She went on to tell me that even though her apartment was in the attic, she often heard him yelling late at night. But that wasn't all. She'd actually met him. One day while walking to her car, she saw him standing in the lawn. He stood perfectly still, with no expression on his face. He was directly in her path, so she cautiously made her way around him. She noticed he was staring at her, so she offered a friendly hi as she passed. He had no reaction, except for one unsettling exception. He stuck out his tongue, then quickly sucked it back into his mouth and resumed acting like a statue. Thoroughly creeped out, she got in her car and drove away. 2 or 3 months later, I finally met him myself. I entered the back door like I had so many months before. This time something was different. There was a light on in the basement. I peered down the staircase. At the bottom, a ragged-looking dog was staring back at me. He's alive. I was not going to read it if he wasn't.
Does the dog talk?
Yeah, it was the same dog I'd heard during my first visit. Then I noticed something else. Behind the dog, I could see a pair of bare feet. The ceiling blocked my view of the rest of whoever was standing there, but it didn't matter. I knew it was him. I should have left right then, but I didn't. I know this probably doesn't make sense, but at this point, my desire to finally get some answers outweighed my fear. I shakily called out, "Meter reader," and started to make my descent. As I made my way down, more of him was revealed. He looked to be middle-aged. His head was shaved and his eyes were wild. He was wearing pants but no shirt. What I remember most was how lean and sinewy his body looked. It had the look of a body that was never at rest. I explained who I was and what I was doing there. To my surprise, not only did he talk to me, but he actually sounded somewhat normal. The volume and pitch of his voice was odd, but he said the same sorts of things that people typically said to meter readers. I even started to doubt whether or not he was the same man I'd heard screaming, but his behavior slowly removed all doubt. As I read the meters, he rapidly paced back and forth. He was constantly wringing his hands together and spastically cocking his head from side to side. The longer he talked, the more agitated he became. He began grimacing, and little verbal tics started popping up in his speech. Every so often, he'd blurt out aloud, "Ah!" in the middle of a sentence. He was trying to suppress these sounds, but he was losing the battle. I started to make my way to the exit. He followed. His verbal outbursts grew louder and more frequent. I was petrified. When I reached the stairs, I drew our conversation to an end and said goodbye. As I turned to head up the stairs, he could no longer hold it in. Screams. The very same unforgettable screams that I'd heard coming from the locked room. I ran up the stairs as fast as my legs would carry me, flung the door open, and rushed back into the daylight. A month or two later, I had a couple of friends, including Laura, over to my place. I was excited to tell her about my encounter, but as I was relaying what happened, I could tell that something else was on her mind. When I finished telling my story, she told me about something she'd seen a couple weeks earlier. One day, she noticed lights flashing outside her window. She looked outside just in time to see the police officers placing the man from the basement in the back seat of a squad car. She later found out from another tenant that he had attacked someone with a knife. That was the last we ever saw of him. I don't know what became of the man in the basement. I like to think that he got the help he needed, but maybe that's just because I'd rather not think about the alternative.
That's so sad. Oh my gosh. That poor man.
I know. I felt really bad for him. It would still be terrifying, but yeah.
Can you imagine like having, because clearly there's something.
Yeah. Some kind of a
mental whatever. Or
it sounds like several different things going on.
Can you imagine like having that going on and then everyone just like perceives you as like the crazy man who lives downstairs and like does nothing besides her to like report it or get him any kind of help? Mm-hmm. Why is that apartment complex just letting him live down there, too? That's so unsafe.
Well, I mean, you can't deny somebody living somewhere.
Is he paying to live there? Because the way that basement sounds, it does not sound like it's, like, an actual apartment that he's living in.
Well, she never went past that door, so we don't know if there was, like, a basement apartment past that door. She never got into, because there was a door on the left where he lived and a door on the right.
So. Okay, because the way that I was thinking is, like, he's just, like, squatting down there with his dog.
I don't think so. I think he lived down there.
Okay, well, that makes me feel a little better.
Yeah. I know, it is a sad story, but I thought it was pretty creepy,
too. I
hope
he's okay.
Me too, sir. Hopefully you got some medication, because it sounds like you just have some tics and stuff.
I hope you got to keep your dog.
Yeah. Although the dog needs better care.
Okay. This one is called The Man on My Patio. And it's by user PestV678. Okay, so this happened when I was around 9 years old, and they're 25 now, and it's something I will never forget. It gives me goosebumps to this day. I live in a terraced house, four houses combined, and my neighbors and I each have our own little patio. Excuse me, sorry. There's a small road 10 meters from my yard. This person's not from America. Meters. 10 meters from my yard where people do their Sunday walks and so on. Only a small fence separates my small yard and patio from that road. I live in a pretty crowded area with several of these terraced houses spread around in my neighborhood, so seeing people walking on that road is pretty normal for me. Seeing random people standing on my patio is not. When I was 9, I usually got home from school about an hour before my mom got home from work. I live maybe 50 meters away from school, so my mom figured I was mature enough to be home alone for around an hour before she got home. This one day I got home from school, I did the usual thing, which was to make sure I locked the front door, and double-check that the back door leading to the patio was also locked. I was 9. Being alone was a little scary, even though it was in the middle of the day and only for an hour. I then rushed to my room upstairs to play as much PlayStation as possible before my mom came home and made me do homework. While playing, I heard this noise coming from outside my window. My room was located one floor over the patio with a view to the road I told you about before. It was kind of like the sound of a cat, but my cat had been missing for over 3 months. Hope sparked, and I thought, oh my gosh, did he finally come back? I ran downstairs to check if it was my cat, but the sight that met me gives me goosebumps just writing this. There was a guy standing on my patio, a tall guy with black hair covering half of his eyes, making him look like a male version of the Ring Woman or something. I could hear him making high-pitched sounds, almost like a cat meowing. A brown liquid was running down from his mouth, and I could see him spitting out my dad's stomped cigarettes.
Ew.
He was actually eating from the ashtray.
Oh, gross.
I was frozen observing this, eventually snapped out of it, and screamed so loud that the man must have heard it. He didn't react. He kept on eating from the ashtray. I ran upstairs to my room, locked the door, and called my mom, who then called the cops. I've never been more terrified in my life. Laying in bed under my sheets, shivering with fear as I hear these creepy, high-pitched noises from the guy eating cigarette butts from the ashtray on my patio. I kind of blacked out for a moment because the next thing I remember is the police arriving on the road by my yard. I hear them talking to the guy, saying stuff like, "What are you doing? Get over here or we will come down and arrest you," and so on. He didn't respond, but the high-pitched sounds were more frequent and louder. I decided to look through the window, feeling safe now that the cops were there. I could see two police officers standing by my fence, a man and a woman. I did not see the creepy man, however, because he was standing directly one story under me in my field of view. The police jumped the fence, and I remember hearing the creepy guy screaming louder than anything I've ever heard before. He charged the female officer with full force, and he fucking knocked her out cold. The male officer then immediately tased him, leaving him shaking on the ground, screaming still. The policeman struggled to keep him on the ground while putting handcuffs on him, but eventually made it. After a while, he managed to wake up the female police officer, who seemed to be badly hurt. He called for backup in an ambulance, and then he saw me standing in the window above him. The expression on my face must have been something else, because he just looked at me and said, "I sure as hell hope you didn't see all that." I started to cry. By this time, neighbors started to arrive, wondering what the hell was going on. One of my neighbors, an elderly woman, made me come down, and she took care of me until my mom came back home. Why? You're... Mom better have left work immediately.
Right.
Like, what? The police took the creepy guy with them in the car and left. Before they left, they promised to come back and talk to us about what had happened. This is where the story takes an unprecedented turn. The male police officer came back later that night and sat down with me and my mom to talk. He explained that the guy on my patio was actually diagnosed with severe autism. He had escaped a facility where mentally challenged people lived, located around 5 kilometers from where I live. He explained that the guy had actually been living in my house 5 years ago, but he had been forced to move when his mom, his only caretaker, died.
Oh, that's so sad.
The poor guy probably thought he would find his mom in my house. He missed the routines and he missed living there with his mom. The police had to move him from the house that time 5 years ago because he was extremely strong. From what I heard, he had extreme tensions in the body because of his autism, making his muscles grow stronger and stronger throughout the years. This was the reason he reacted the way he did when the police came this day. Still frightened, I told the police officer that he needed to make sure this would never happen again. He promised it wouldn't. After a few sleepless nights, my life got back to normal. The years went by and the guy didn't come back, until a year ago. At this time, my mom and dad had moved out. I bought the house from them and I'm still living there today. I was enjoying my morning coffee on the patio when I see this random guy stopping on the road by my fence. He just stands there, looking at me. I look at him and give him a nod, and then I hear the high-pitched noises. Holy shit, it's him. His hair had turned gray, but the high-pitched sounds made me realize. My heart started racing, and I instantly remembered the reason why he was back. I realized that he must have managed to escape again. Because I kept my cool a bit longer than when I was 9, I started to realize how sorry I felt for him. 16 years later, and he was back to look for his mom. I decided to carefully ask him if he wanted to come down to the patio, and he instantly jumped the fence. I started to think he would knock me out like he did to that police officer. He didn't. He smiled. He looked at me and smiled. I offered him to sit down. He didn't respond. I offered him to come inside. He started laughing. We went inside. His face lit up, pure joy. He was home. It reminded him of the life he had with his mom. It almost made me tear up. All of a sudden, he sat down on my couch, turned on my TV, and switched directly to the cartoons. I observed him for a while. He was just completely focused on the cartoons. I just wanted him to enjoy the moment, so I didn't say anything to him. I realized I had to call the facility to let them know. The caretakers arrived 10 minutes later. After a lot of convincing, he got back up, crying, and they went back to the facility. I called the facility 2 days later, and we made a deal. His name is Tom, and I now consider Tom my friend. Every Sunday from the day he returned, Tom and his caretakers visit me to watch cartoons.
Aww.
They say it's the highlight of his week. It makes my heart warm. Now, for several years, my thoughts were, let's not meet guy on my patio eating from the ashtray. Now my thoughts are, let's meet every Sunday to watch cartoons, my friend Tom.
Aw, that's really sweet.
Like the sweetest thing ever.
Poor Tom.
I know. Also, what an awesome dude to just be like, yeah, come in.
Yeah.
That's all he wanted. Wasn't trying to be scary.
But I guess not knowing that the first time,
it when you're, I mean, really also scary. Being 9 years old and home by yourself, obviously you're like, this is terrifying.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure it was.
I guess I went a totally different direction with my next story because it is not heartwarming.
Oh, I have the last two of mine aren't either.
Yeah. This is from Fucking Love Gingers 6 years ago.
Okay.
And it's called The Corduroy Jouster. This happened over a decade ago somewhere in northern Michigan during the summer. My friend Kathy, 18, and my boyfriend's half-sister May, 16, and I, 17, drove from our hometown to visit friends, and we're on our way back home in Kathy's shitty little Geo. By shitty, I'm talking this piece of crap had engine problems, overheating problems, ignition problems, and was constantly falling apart. More than once, it had stalled or just stopped working in the middle of the street while we were trying to get somewhere, but Kathy thought we'd be fine since we hadn't had any problems with it on the way to our friend's house. It's a little past midnight, and we're roughly an hour away from home. It's a pretty bold trek for a car.
Yeah.
Sounds to be held together with duct tape. There's nobody on the road, dense woods on every side, no streetlights, no moon. I can barely see past the windshield because I have a form of albinism, which leaves me legally blind in my left eye and with really awful vision in my right eye. My depth perception is terrible, and I can't see more than a few feet ahead of me at most. But usually I can make out lights in other cars when they pass, and sometimes street signs and people when they are close enough. We drove down the narrow, hilly road, and on the descent down a hill, the Geo makes a strange sound. Kathy starts braking, and when we get to the bottom of the hill, the car quits working. Kathy swears and turns on the hazard lights. She and I get out of the vehicle, and I help pop the hood, which causes a bunch of smoke to fly out. After the smoke mostly clears, Kathy tries to figure out what went wrong this time. We stand in the dark for at least 45 minutes, maybe longer, before we realize she couldn't fix the car and we needed a tow truck. These were the days of MapQuest printouts and brick phones, so we couldn't whip out our smartphones and look up the closest tow truck. I decided to call my boyfriend Caleb to come pick us up and suggest we come with a tow truck to pick up the Geo when it was daylight. May and Kathy agreed, so I take out my cruddy Nokia and call my boyfriend. It's then I realize no service. I ask May and Kathy if either of them have service. They both check and shake their heads. May gets a bit panicky and we all hold our phones up trying to get a signal to no avail. It's hot as fuck, and after failing to get any kind of service, we're all feeling a bit spooked and uncomfortable. May begs us to do something because she is more afraid than Kathy and I. Kathy attempts to calm May down, and I wonder if the thick woods and hills are blocking out our reception. I tell May and Kathy to wait by the car and walk away from them up the hill we've just come down, holding my phone out. Still no signal. I walk further and further away until I reach the top of the hill. I can't see the outline of the Geo anymore, but I can still hear May at a distance. Even at the top of the hill, I don't get a signal. I know it's got to be the trees in the way, so I get the idea of climbing up a tree and calling from there, just to see if it works. In hindsight, this was not my brightest idea, but me being an idiot, I saunter off into the woods in search of a climbable tree. At this point, I just want to go home, and this is the only thing on my mind. I find a nice one with low branches and lift my body upwards toward the trunk. I climb the branches higher and higher, and about midway up the tree, I feel my pack of cigarettes fall out of my shorts pocket. I'm kind of annoyed to figure I can just look for them when I climb back down. I take my phone out and hold it up once I get near the top. I have service. Relieved, I call Caleb, but he doesn't pick up, so I call again until he does. He answers in a sleepy but pissed voice, but I'm having none of that and simply explain our situation. He asks where we are, and I give the name of the road and my best guess as to how far along we are on it. He says it will be on his way and tells me to go back and wait with May and Kathy, then yells at me for being stupid and climbing a tree in the dark with my bad depth perception. I assure him that I'm fine. He's skeptical, but says okay, and we hang up. I start climbing down the tree, but my hand touches a big glob of sap, so I stop and try to wipe the sticky goop off on my shirt. I'm already sweaty and gross, so I'm not too happy about the sap. While I'm failing at getting this crud off my hands, I hear the strangest sound from somewhere below me. Swish, swish, swish. I completely freeze, but not being able to place what the hell that sound is, but it's moving pretty fast. I stare down into the darkness below me, but I can't see shit.
It's a lumberjack chopping down the tree.
I just hear this noise continuing. It comes closer and closer, and then I hear it right below me. Swish. And then it stops, right under my tree. I hold onto the branches as tight as I can and wait. I hear leaves shuffling and twigs snapping, and after a while, that stops, and the weird noise starts again, but it's heading away from me deeper into the woods. I wait until I can no longer hear the sound, then finish climbing down and jump out of the tree. It's completely silent now besides the sounds of the woods, so I grip around the ground for my cigarettes. I don't find them, so I make my way out of the woods and back towards the road. I jog down the hill, and when I reach the bottom, I notice May and Kathy are not standing outside the car anymore, and the hazard lights are off. I walk over to the car, and May rolls down the window a little bit and whispers in a panicked voice, "Elizabeth, where the hell were you?" I point back over my shoulder towards the hill and start to explain that I called her brother, but Kathy yelled, "What are you doing? Get the fuck back in the car." I give them a weird look, but May unlocks and opens the door, and I crawl into the back seat with her, slamming it behind me. Kathy slams the locks and double checks them while May rolls up the window and makes sure the rest are all rolled up. One of the windows has never closed all the way, but there's less than a finger space, so it's not too big of a deal. But May is freaking out about it, and Kathy has lost her cool as well. I'm still confused and ask what the heck is going on. May tells me that a bit after I went up the hill, some weird person came out of the woods and ran really funny up the hill in the direction I went. They got freaked out and turned the lights off and got in the car. They thought he had got me. I am honestly scared at this point because if I hadn't stopped to wipe the sap off my hands, I most likely would have got out of the tree at the time I heard the weird noise. I just knew it was that person. I tell them my story and everybody in the car is scared shitless, but are relieved that Kayla was on his way now. We only have to play the waiting game. We sit on the road for what seems like forever. The dread we were feeling made time seem like it was going slower than normal. Kathy and May are looking out the windows, surveying the area, and I'm just sitting there hoping Caleb will hurry the fuck up and come rescue us. Suddenly I hear May whine, "Oh my God," and she starts crying. Kathy snaps her head to where May is looking and stifles a gasp. I look where they are facing. I see nothing but the dark. But then I hear it through the small opening in the window. Swish, swish, swish. May ducks down as though doing that will help make her invisible, and Kathy hides her head behind the steering wheel. I follow their lead and sort of hunch down in my seat, but the noise comes straight up to the window. I can almost make out the silhouette of a tall, skinny man, and then he presses his face against May's window, and I finally see him. Nobody screams. You'd think we would, but it didn't happen. We all just stared at each other. He looks in at us for a while until Kathy switches her brights on, hoping it would scare him off, but it did nothing. The dude just walked to the front of the car and stood in front of the headlights. Maybe he thought he could block us from leaving. I don't know. I couldn't make out his features very well, but the guy had to be somewhere a bit over 6 feet and no older than 30. He had the face of your average Joe, nothing special. Nothing really sinister or particularly creepy that you'd notice about him if you ran into this dude in broad daylight. Dark shaved hair, pale skin, long face. May said he had light-colored eyes and stubble with eyebrows that made him look like he was always concerned, but there was no way I could make that out, so I had to take her word for it. What was really weird is that it was like 80 degrees, and this dude was wearing corduroys, which is what the sound was. Corduroys make that swishy sound when you walk, and an oversized sweater with abnormally long sleeves. The sleeves went over his hands and flopped back and forth as he paced around in front of the Geo. I'm not sure how long he was in front of the car, but it was a while. Then good old Corduroy starts doing something really bizarre. He bends his arms up towards his face, which I can only describe as looking like a praying mantis because of the way his sleeves were hanging. And then he begins walking circles around the car, rhythmically taking 2 steps forward, 1 step back, like goddamn Willy Wonka, but on speed or something. This is where I noticed the swish sound matched up exactly to the same sound I heard when I was back in the tree. He was doing the 2 steps forward, 1 step back in the fucking woods when he was going after me, as though that wasn't weird enough. By now, May was sobbing and Kathy seemed like she had to vomit, so I felt like I had to be the brave one. I looked at the slight space in the open window, and when he orbited his way over there, I said, "Hey, man, can you just stop? You're really freaking us out." Corduroy definitely heard me, so he switched to a halt and looked back into the car through the windshield, straight at me. I asked him very firmly to leave, and he took an extended pause, smiled, then Willy Wonka'd his way out of my line of vision into the darkness. After a while, Kathy said he disappeared into the woods, and May was like, "I can't believe that worked." We awkwardly laughed about what a weirdo he was and glad he left and whatever, and we went back to waiting for Caleb, somewhat assured but still paranoid. But after some time, Kathy said, "Oh no, he's back." I couldn't see it, but apparently he was doing the 2 steps forward, 1 step back, parallel to us on the side of the road. And this time he had a big tree branch he was holding with his sweater-covered hands. May got scared again, and I held her hand so she'd feel better about it, even though I was ready to shit myself. I would be as well.
I'd be like, "Where the fuck is my boyfriend?" Right.
It was awful because I didn't know if he was coming towards us or if he was moving away or what the hell he was up to. It was kind of like when you knew there was going to be a jump scare in a horror movie. Then I hear Corduroy swish back towards the Geo, and on my window, he smacks it with the tree branch. May and I panic, and I scoot as close to her as possible. They see the dude back up into the woods, then come running back and slamming the branch into my window, like he's jousting with no horse. Thankfully, the window didn't break, but it got terrifying hearing swish, 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 clunk after a while. And he did this repetitively. Kathy perks up in her seat and starts pointing at the road ahead. "I see flashlights." She blares the horn and flashes the lights. Lo and behold, it's our savior, Caleb. He brought his older brother, Alex, and they both got out of his car and head over to us. May's sobs turn into joyous laughter as they approach. There was a typo. Now, Caleb and Alex have always been tall guys. Walking around with them was like walking around with high elves. It felt very safe. Caleb was 6'8", and Alex is around 6'5". So I thought two dudes taller than Corduroy Jouster would make him leave. But nope. Caleb walks towards Corduroy, trying to assess the situation, and Alex comes over to the car and taps on the window, tells Kathy to get out. She does, and he walks her over to his car. Then he comes back and puts the car in neutral so he can push it off to the side of the road. May and I slowly get out, and May makes a bolt for her brother's car. I help Alex push the car to the side while Caleb distracts the Corduroy Jouster by holding the end of his stick and telling him to fuck the fuck off. Corduroy yanks the branch away from Caleb and starts backing up and going 2 steps backward, 1 step forward, and disappears into the darkness down the street. I can't see him, but Caleb can. The dude backs up pretty far and then comes launching at Caleb, who sprints the other way down the road, because that stick could have really hurt him. He bumps past Alex, who had already got out of the Geo and was opening his car door, leaving me behind the Geo and the Geo alone. Corduroy apparently changed directions and aimed the stick at me, but I couldn't really tell. I just heard everybody shout, "Elizabeth!" This startles me, and I jump to the side of the Geo, hearing Corduroy smash his stick into the back window with a loud thud and a swish. I take the long way around the car and sprint off into the road and feel Caleb grab my arm and tug me over to Alex's car. I feel like the wind has been knocked out of me and my legs don't seem to work, but Caleb manages to shove me in the back seat and scrambles into the passenger side. By now, we are all safely in the car, and Corduroy is standing like a mantis in front of the headlights again. He had abandoned his stick and just stood there with no intention to move. Alex puts the car into reverse and slams on the gas, making me knock my head against the door, then makes the sloppiest U-turn ever and nearly drives us into the woods. But gets us back onto the road. Everybody was in 100% what the fuck mode as Alex tore away, far over whatever the speed limit was. May and Kathy swear they saw Corduroy chasing behind us after Alex made the U-turn, but there was no way he was catching up. The next day, I went back there with Caleb, Kathy, and the dude from the tow truck place. There was no sign of Corduroy anymore, but when we approached the Geo, we saw that in this space where the window didn't close all the way were my cigarettes. The box was missing, but they were all neatly jammed in a row along the window space. I have no doubt it was the work of the Corduroy Jouster. To this day, I wonder if he knew I was up in the tree and took my cigarettes, or if he thought I dropped them and went further into the woods to look for me, or if he just found them later and decided to stick them through the window because he was fucking weird. I also still wonder what the hell his intentions were. I still have so many unanswered questions. That's so scary.
Yeah. It sounds like a lot of these stories are just like unwell people.
Maybe, or just somebody really trying to F with someone. I mean,
the person sounds like he might live in the woods. What are you looking at?
Yeah, we just got a thing saying the maximum recording time for segments is 60 minutes. And we're at 45, so.
We'll take our break.
All right, we will take a little breaky break. Okay, we are back, and Emma's going to go ahead and read her stories now because I picked super long ones, I was just informed.
They are really long.
But they're really good.
They are good, yeah. I like reading the really long ones, but when we have to read them out loud, I feel like I get, like, cotton mouth when I read the epically long ones.
Yeah. I just went to Best of All Time, and there was someone who had compiled the ones they thought were, like, the scariest.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. I have another one, but it's really long and kind of heavy, so we're going to save that for another day.
Okay, so my next one is from a deleted account, but it is called I Wish It Was My Drunk Roommates Eating My Food.
Oh, no.
So, this is my brother's girlfriend's story. She doesn't have a Reddit, but I told her about this subreddit, and she wanted to share her story because it's creepy, but also to learn from. I go to school in a big city that is one of the least safe cities in the United States. I chose a school for nursing and definitely not for the location. I live in a row house, that's what we call it, off of campus with four other girls. Cheaper and nicer than dorms, or so we thought. I guess you get what you pay for. We are all girls and sophomores in college. As you would guess, we go out and drink, come back, do things we don't remember. We had just started our rent in August, three floors plus a basement which was padlocked by the owners. Understandable, we would definitely have parties down there to avoid immediate cleanup. The house was great, amazing location to the school and work. I am a CNA who works odd hours, and this is important for later, and it was not expensive and in good condition. I had never lived with that many people before, just one roommate, so before we definitely knew if one of us had misplaced or changed something. I started to notice my snacks were either half gone or completely gone. I was getting annoyed, but a house of many people, it's too much work to go figure out who ate what, so I ignored it. Slowly, as girls do, we started making comments about someone eating our food, but passive-aggressively. Been there.
Yeah.
We all just let it go, because who wants a whole house fight? I work until about 11 in the NICU, get home at about 11:30 mostly on weeknights. I started to notice pans left out or snack wrappers around. I thought it was odd because none of my roommates had done that before, but just thought, oh, they probably drank a bottle of wine, then went to bed and forgot about all of this. Again, my roommate started making comments. This time, we started to ask because it was getting annoying, all of our food being gone and things being left. I knew it was one of them, but who wants to admit they ate someone else's snacks in college? Snacks are a high commodity. We chalked it up to the girl who always smokes and eats her weight in food. She swore it wasn't her. This went on for about 2 months. It got more obvious someone was clearly taking everyone's food. Definitely the girl that always smokes. I see her eat her whole snack pantry in a night. I wish it was her. One night at work, I was about to get off, but a situation happened and I didn't end up leaving until 12:30. I took the bus home. I carry pepper spray, a taser, and a pocket knife, don't worry. I got home and was about to collapse. I wanted to go to bed ASAP. I walked in the front door and the stairs are directly in front of you. You can also see down the side into the kitchen. I walked in and saw someone in the kitchen, but was way too tired to say hi, thinking it could end in like a 30-minute conversation about nothing, so I went straight upstairs. When I got to the second floor, I noticed all of my roommates' doors were closed, which always means they are all either in their room for the night or asleep. I got a weird feeling, just something that made it click. They were all asleep, right? I texted our house group chat asking if anyone was in the kitchen. I felt stupid for even asking. Two responded no, and they said the other two had been asleep. I knew it wasn't any of my roommates down there at that moment. I dialed 911, but didn't press call.
I crept into my roommate's room across the hall. Thankfully, or maybe not thankfully, she didn't have her door locked. I whispered, telling her I think someone is in the house, and she gave me the widest eyes ever and almost looked like she was going to cry. She didn't suspect anything like I had, but for reference, a very bad area, as in there was a shooting in the house two doors down only 2 weeks earlier by an intruder. She mouthed to make the call. The whole time we were dead silent. We didn't hear really anything at all. I was starting to think I was seeing things after such a long day at work and was regretting that I dialed, thinking I'm going to look like an idiot when they show up, and I was just overtired and dreaming. We explained what's going on, and they said that they will send someone ASAP, and that actually does mean right away since it is a big and dangerous city. The police showed up, and I didn't even want to go downstairs, but the operator confirmed it was them, so I did. But the whole time, I could swear the operator could hear my heart beating. The police came in and looked around. I'm thinking, oh god, I look so dumb. They ask if there are any other floors. We tell them technically the basement, but it's padlocked, so really no. They checked the basement just in case, and well, yeah, they were right. A man had been living in the padlocked basement. The lock was pulled off the hinges and just kind of propped against the wall. We never looked at that, though. We rarely went out back. The guy had taken a comforter of one of my roommates out of the hall closet, had a mattress from God knows where, and his clothes. Well, he was the one moving and eating all of our stuff. He would come out in the middle of the night and do it. He started getting more comfortable. I don't know if he was drugged out and forgot to clean his tracks, or if he didn't really care. Me and my roommates have pretty consistent schedules during the week, probably letting him think that any time after 12 was good to come out. We never slept with our individual doors locked, and that's what freaks me out most. He had access to any one of us at any moment, and we had no idea. When he was getting arrested, I was the only one to go down and look. I don't know why. I did. I wish I didn't. I took a picture in the process of him being arrested to show my roommates who were too afraid to go down. This is him. So yeah, let's never actually meet, dude. Literally has a picture of him.
Oh my gosh.
Getting arrested.
He looks kind of old.
Yeah.
It's really scary.
It's horrifying.
Yeah, I would like to know what city she's living in so I can never go there.
Yeah, I don't think she'll ever say.
I'm trying to think of good nursing schools, where they're at.
Terrifying.
That is really terrifying.
Yeah.
All right, we got time for one more.
Okay.
Now that I'm going to lock my door and, well,
yeah. This one, yeah, we'll make you lock your door even more. This one is by Reddit user. This is super recent, 12 hours ago.
Oh my gosh.
By Reddit user UpsetZucchini6687. I posted about my stalker on Reddit and he found it.
Oh no.
Quick backstory. I've had a stalker for about 4 years. He was never aggressive or sent me proper threats, so stubborn as I am, I did my best to ignore him and not give him the satisfaction of showing him any fear. To be honest, after a while I also wasn't scared anymore, since he almost never came close to me. I know being stalked can affect people severely, even in a case like mine, and that's totally valid, but I guess I just got lucky and was never really psychologically affected by it. His stalking behavior mostly just consisted of sending me letters and, quote, gifts, such as photos of my own apartment building from the outside, things he dug out of my trash can, and so on. I called the police many times, but they weren't able to, or really tried, to be honest, to catch or identify him. About 3 weeks ago, I discovered the German version of the subreddit RIMA, which is like I am a doctor, I am whatever, and thought that people might want to know what it's like to have a stalker. Since I barely use any social media aside from Reddit and have no personally identifying information here, I didn't think he'd ever see it. One person even asked, does he know you're putting him on blast on Reddit? And I answered, maybe. Maybe it would make him angry. Maybe he'd be turned on. Don't know. Don't care. Well, I know the real answer now. He did see it, and he did not like it. Like I said, he was never aggressive and never came close to me. The closest I know of was when he sent me a picture of myself unlocking my apartment door, taken from the corner of the steps above. Sorry if that makes no sense, I don't know how else to explain it, but I consider myself a pretty vigilant person and I'm thinking that he might have hid a camera there instead of being there to take the photo himself. I think I would have noticed him if he did. I don't know how he got wind of the AMA, but he did. The next week was quiet, no letters, and I didn't see him anywhere. Then he left me letters with printed out questions and my answers from the post. He also left me a long, hateful letter towards my boyfriend about an issue I had posted on the German version of Am I the Asshole? His letters were never hateful like that before, though he never seemed happy with my boyfriend. He wrote about how I should share the spotlight with him since I got so much attention, thanks to him. A few days later, I got a gift, but this time he didn't leave it in my mailbox or at my car like he usually did. No. This time, he left it inside the apartment building right in front of my door. I didn't take it inside my apartment, but opened it outside. It was a pretty big box, which was also unusual, and it was taped shut. As I'm typing it out, I realized that wasn't a good idea at all and could have ended badly for me, but luckily he didn't send me a bomb or anything. He did, however, send me several zip ties, a roll of tape, the kind you use to tape off walls when painting, nothing you could use to restrain someone, a TV remote with most of the buttons picked off, a pack of band-aids with a few used ones, not actually, just made to look that way according to the police, and a framed picture of me.
Oh my god.
I could tell the picture was taken a few days ago, and my boyfriend was next to me but cut out of the photo. The frame was shattered, and the package was full of glass shards, clearly more than just what could have fallen out of the frame, and they were also intentionally put inside the crumbled newspaper that was stuffed in there to keep it all in place. I called the police right away and gave it to them. They were more concerned this time, finally, thank you, and told me they'd send patrol cars more frequently. He didn't show up or leave me any letters or gifts for about another week and a half, but 8 days ago it started again. I found letters in my mailbox where he wrote about how he wasted his time on me, how I haven't been appreciating his effort, and how he was wrong about me being special. 5 days ago I left my apartment in the morning and heard a crunch sound as I stepped on my doormat. He put broken glass under it in the night. I went off to work because I was in a hurry and was just going to make my boyfriend call the police, but then I found that my car had also been vandalized. The sides were scratched, the lights were smashed, and the windshield had a phrase painted on. It's time soon. Miss, insert her last name.
Oh my god, that's so scary.
I went back inside and called the cops myself. They found the same phrase on a note under the doormat. This time they really, really, really took me seriously, which might have been because I was just pissed at this point, which I made very clear. If, for some reason, you're like me and just too stubborn to be afraid of a stalker like mine, then all of this, the letters, gifts, photos, even the damn glass under my doormat, are just really annoying and inconvenient. But my car was useless to me now, and the threat scared even me. I did, however, have a dash cam in my car, and it caught everything. The police took the footage as evidence, even though the dash cam footage wasn't of high quality, and I'd given them photos of him that were just as good before, but they said it's not enough, and they told me they'll look into it further and promise to send more patrol cars again. Then it was quiet for 2 more days. Until 2 days ago. Someone rang the doorbell at just after 4 a.m. My boyfriend and I got up, but we were both hesitant, but I saw blue lights outside, and just as I got up, I heard them shouting, "This is the police. Please open the door." They told us they were called by one of our downstairs neighbors who came home from his night shift about an hour earlier and heard someone else enter the building after them before the door fell shut. My neighbors know of my situation and I've asked them to make sure they don't let strangers into the building. This neighbor then went into his own apartment and looked through the peephole. We have motion-activated lights in the stairway, so he waited to see if they turned back on. They did. Then he saw a middle-aged man walk upstairs. Above this neighbor are only me and my boyfriend and a single mom with 3 kids who probably won't be getting any visitors at 3 a.m., so he called the police. They came and found my stalker one half floor above me on the stairs. He should have been able to see the cop cars since there's a little window up there and they had their lights on, but he either missed them or wanted to get caught. They found a pocket knife on him and he confessed to being my stalker right away. He's finally caught. They got him. It took 4 years and a provocative Reddit post and one very vigilant and caring neighbor, but he's finally done. For now, at least. He's facing several charges, and I've collected every single piece of evidence over the past 4 years. I don't know what kind of outcome I can expect, but for now, I've finally gotten some peace.
That's so scary. That's super scary.
It's terrifying.
I feel bad for people who have stalkers. I can't imagine feeling so vulnerable every time you do anything. And
well, then it's also scared. Probably something that you never get over.
No.
Like, that's just such a violation of everything. Like, your own, like, autonomy. Even if they're not entering your house, like, that's just, like, you never feel safe. And even if he's in jail, I don't think, I would never feel safe even after that, because it's, like, when is he going to get out?
I was going to say, I don't think the sentencing for stalking's that long.
I mean, they'll do, like, a restraining order, but that doesn't, it's a piece of paper.
Yeah.
Just means he'll get arrested when he shows up again.
She'll have to move probably before he gets out somewhere.
Yeah.
Undisclosed.
Shout out to that neighbor.
Yeah. That, I mean, it could have ended way worse, because what was he going to do?
Probably kill them both.
Oh, my God.
So or try to. I mean, why would you show up at 4 a.m. with a pocket knife after destroying her car?
And leaving glass everywhere and saying, your time is coming.
Mm-hmm. And he knows, like, her last name and everything.
Which should probably easy to find out.
Based I mean, on if he's, I mean, I'm sure he's looking at her mail and shit.
Yeah. Fucking weirdo. I always wonder, like, wasn't Sandra Bullock, didn't she have to move out of New Orleans because she had a stalker?
She had to move out of her house, yeah.
Yeah.
She was, like, actively coming into her home.
And that shit is so scary.
Yeah. It's terrifying.
Very much. All right, well, hopefully you enjoyed these Let's Not Meet stories, and sorry if you're listening to them at night and now you can't sleep. That's kind of the way it goes.
Mm-hmm. I like doing these episodes.
I do too. They're fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So. It's interesting to read, like, real life stories or presumed to be real stories of stuff like this.
Yeah. If you have any of your own Let's Not Meet encounters, please share them with us. And Emma's cat's currently inside the bookshelf. Staring out. She's getting very brave. We're really proud of her. She's coexisting with the other animals just in time for us to make a big move and freak her out.
Yeah.
But that's okay. She's going back to her roots. She'll be happy. But, all right, well, thanks, and we'll be coming back hopefully next week for sure. I mean, again, things are crazy. I'm trying to find a job. If anybody wants to give me a job.
Remote.
Remote job. DM me and we'll.
It doesn't pay $11 an hour.
Right. Or that isn't part of some pyramid scheme or just some scam in general, or I don't know, I don't have to do something super questionable.
Sell knives.
At this point, slightly questionable I'm okay with, but super questionable, not so much.
No. You don't want to sell knives over Zoom?
I do not. Yeah. That one's too funny. All right, well, have a great rest of your day or night or whatever you got, and we'll be back next week with a paranormal episode. All right.
Bye. Peace out.
Bye. Oh, wait, we forgot to do our outro.
See you next time when we...
Thanks for listening to the Monsters and Mixers podcast. Please leave us a 5-star rating on either Apple or Google. Or Google, I'm sorry. Or on Spotify. We really could use those. It helps other people find us. Send us your stories at monstersandmixers2@gmail.com or follow us on our socials. You know, get out there and meet some ghosts.
And make some toast.